Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Family Matters.
When a parent lashes out at the other parent in front of a child, or simply says hurtful things about the other parent in front of a child, they are also attacking that child's sense of self-worth and confidence. This is an act of alienation and is harmful to children and can cause a lifetime of issues for the child. Issues as serious as anxiety, depression, substance abuse, and thoughts of or actual suicide. Help spread the word. Visit www.paawareness.org.
Wow, what a great 30-second spot that is, and we've got another one that I absolutely love. This is Jill Ajizi, and I'm so proud to have you all listening in on Family Matters this evening. Of course, I'm the president of the Parental Alienation Awareness Organization International, and very proud to be in that position, and newly elected and trying to really create awareness and educate the public about the horrors of parental alienation and how terrible it can be for the hearts, minds, and souls of our children and the destruction of our families. Tonight, I am so pleased to have a wonderful guest in this woman, Phyllis Schlafly, that is with us here tonight. And I'm going to give her a brief introduction because I want to be able to spend most of the hour listening to the wisdom that comes from this woman. And so I want to tell you that Phyllis is a mother, she is a wife, she is an author, a lawyer. She was named one of the most influential people of the 20th century by Ladies Home Journal. What an outstanding accomplishment. And of course, many of you will remember Phyllis as being the national leader in the conservative movement since 1964 and a leader of the pro-family movement since 1972 when she led the opposition against the ERA movement and was successful in defeating the Equal Rights Amendment. When she also, in 1972, formed the Eagle Forum, and it took flight and still is alive and well today, and she is just everywhere, and her wisdom is incredible. So welcome, Phyllis.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for all those kind things you said. I have had a very interesting life. God has been good to me.
Well, today I was talking with my father, who was an Illinois legislator for 26 years.
And oh, what was his name?
His name is Jack Davis, and he was a minority leader in the House for many years and then went on to Congress and then became Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. But he said, I had many meetings with Phyllis, and he said, she probably won't remember me, but I thought so much of her and the ideas and revolutionary thought that you came up with. He was very pleased to be affiliated with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate those kind words.
Well, Phyllis, this show, I don't know if you're aware, but Family Matters was born out of the parental alienation. I am an alienated mother, and of course, that's when, for those of you who are listening and don't know, that's when a spouse, divorce environment, and sometimes in intact families, when an ex-spouse is trying to turn the children against the other spouse. And so I'm an alienated mom, and I decided that I was going to do exactly what you did in the 60s and 70s, Phyllis.
Well, good for you. I'm glad you did. And now you have a radio program so you can talk to the world.
That's exactly what you did, and we thank you for that, for the kind of pioneer in doing just the things we're doing today. So I wanted to talk about the book that you wrote, Supremacists, the Tyranny of Judges and How to Stop It. And we talk a lot on this program about the horrors that happen in family courts. And so let's talk about why you decided to write that book.
Well, the Founding Fathers thought that the judiciary was going to be the weakest branch of government because it didn't have either the sword, that is, military supplies, and it didn't have the power of the purse. But in modern times, in the last 20 years, the judges have made the judiciary the most powerful branch of government because it's making decisions about controversial issues that ought to be legislative matters. And you can mention things like the Pledge of Allegiance, prayer in school, property rights, immigration rights, all kinds of things, election law, and the judges are making these decisions. And in I know that you're particularly interested in family courts, and in my study of this, it does appear to me that while the family court judges are the bottom of the ladder in prestige and supposed power, I think they're the most powerful branch of the judiciary because they're seldom overturned and because they're making decisions about child custody, about how the household money is spent, about who gets to spend it. The extraordinary breadth of decisions that they are making that are never overturned or even appealed.
Well, and I think it's amazing, Phyllis, that there are so many people willing across the United States and all around the world today to really turn the future of their children and their lives over to a family court judge who maybe hasn't even practiced in family law. How do you feel about people who are wanting to get their emotional justice in family court, and they will do it at any cost?
Well, the problem is, and of course the simple way to describe this is the people who said the village should raise the child. Village mm-hmm. is a synonym for government. So that means instead of the parents deciding what is right for their children, you have judges and psychologists and psychiatrists and custody evaluators and parental training people all making decisions about your children. And another thing that has happened over the years is a distortion and misdefinition of the expression, the best interest of the child. Now, so far as we know, that expression was first used by Blackstone, and I think in the 1600s, and it meant that the parent was the one to decide what was in the best interest of the child, and nobody could overrule that. But we have come to a situation where judges think they can decide that instead of the parent, and I think it is a very, very bad situation because it's taking a subjective issue and letting the judge put his own opinion on it.
Absolutely. And when the United States state legislatures revised their family law statutes in the 70s, the best interest of the child really became disconnected from parents' decisions, didn't it?
That's exactly what happened. It was disconnected from parents' decision. And people have this idea that if a husband and wife are in conflict, then you need some third party to make all the decisions. Well, that's crazy. I mean, even in intact marriages, people disagree all the time, and you have to work it out. And it's much better if they work it out themselves than having judges and outside people. I know, for example, of one case where the psychologist appointed to make these decisions was a homosexual who never had any children and whose private practice was getting homosexuals to come out and be public about what they were doing. And how can people like this decide about your children?
Well, while we were speaking, Dr. James Wardner, he's a friend of mine, so I feel like I can call him Jim, joined us on this call. And Jim is, as many of you who are listening know, is a dentist from Florida, Titusville, Florida, and just a really great guy. But he has had some problems with parental alienation and court system. And welcome, Jim, tonight. Thanks for getting here. I know you were running late.
Well, I certainly agree with you about parental alienation. It's just a terrible thing when one parent really poisons the mind of the child against the other. It's just a dreadful thing. And I don't know if judges or these people who are hangers-on of the court are really capable of identifying it and remedying it.
Well, I think, Phyllis, as we move into 2011, I can see some baby steps happening in the parental alienation movement all across the nation. And specifically, my normal co-host is Judge Michelle Lawrence, who is a family court judge in Chicago, in Cook County Court. And she is making some really outstanding decisions based on what she sees as parental alienation. Now, as we all know in this world, using those words sets off red lights and red flags and buzzers and dingers and all these things. And so describing the behaviors in court has really been better for people who are trying to use that that defense when they've lost their children. And it's just a very scary thing, and especially now at the holiday time when alienated parents are trying to traverse this whole holiday issue without their children. It's very, very difficult.
And isn't it a kind of a subtle thing that it isn't easy to detect? It's done in a very sneaky, subtle ways, so that it isn't completely obvious to a bystander who's not familiar with it. Don't you find that's true?
You're absolutely right. It is very subliminal in a lot of cases, but the children will act very normal around some of the people that they were in contact with prior to the divorce or the alienation. And so it's very hard to pinpoint it sometimes, and it almost makes the target parent look as if, you know, it isn't really happening. But I'm here to attest that, boy, it is alive and well, and it's being used all over this country, all over this world, and it is a sad thing for the hearts, minds, and souls of our children. It really is. I wanted to talk to you, and I know that you had weighed in on, there was a case in Chicago that we had talked about on many occasions on our show, the Joe Reyes case. And if you could just, if you'd like to give the background on that, if not, I can do it. But I'd like to get your thoughts on that, on the Reyes case in Chicago.
Well, is that the case where the judge wanted to decide what church the kid goes to?
Absolutely. That's it.
Well, what kind of a country do we live in that the judge should make this decision? It kind of leaves you with your mouth open, the way the broadness of the decisions that these family court judges think they can make. And he wanted to, that's when he wanted to punish the father for taking the child to a Christian church. Isn't that the case?
Absolutely. Wanted to take him to a Catholic church, and the mother was saying that the child should have been raised in the Jewish faith. And she was adamant that he was not going to involve her in the Catholic Church.
And so the judge was basically going to take the child away from the father because he dared to do that. Well, this is a difference of a religious opinion between the two parents, but they have to work that out. I simply don't believe that the situation is better off if some outsider, some third party, some judge or psychologist or psychiatrist makes those decisions.
When do you think, Phyllis, because as we said earlier, the English common law was how all of this developed in the United States in 1765 with William Blackstone. How did we get off track? Where did it happen? How did it get from the lovely family that I had as a child, a mom and a dad, and you know, the eating at the dinner table and no video games and all of that good stuff? How did we get from that to where we are now?
Well, I blame the feminist movement for most of it. I mean, I guess I'm older than you, but I certainly grew up in a land where your average guy was able to have a good job that had some security about it. He was able to buy a car, make a down payment on a house, and have a full-time homemaker wife. And we've just lost that. And now we find that 41% of the babies born in this country are illegitimate. They're not married. And that means that they have a growing dependence on government handouts. And the feminists started by getting judges to hold that children are unrelated to whether the parents are married or not. And that is extremely unfortunate. And then, of course, the feminists put through the unilateral divorce getting a divorce is about like checking a box on a printed form. You don't have to have any reason. There doesn't have to be any fault of the other party for you to get a divorce. You just say, I'm tired of this. I'm checking out. And so they succeeded in that. And then, it's pretty funny. I've been following the feminists for years. And when they started out on the Equal Rights Amendment, they drew up some marriage contracts, and they had some of these where they decided that that you had to agree that the mother does the diapers and the dishes Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and the husband Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, and they wanted absolutely a 50-50 performance of household duties. But once they have a divorce, then they think the father's only good for a paycheck. They want total control of the child, and they have gotten a lot of the family court judges to go along with a bias against fathers. Now, of course, sometimes it works the other way. I guess you've seen it the other way, where it was a bias against the mother. But I think the majority of the cases, it's a bias against the father. And in any event, the problem is they're letting the village or the government or the judge or the psychiatrist decide who has the custody of the children, how the family income is divided and spent. And it's government intrusion into family life that we never could have dreamed would happen 25 years ago.
Phyllis, I have a call I'm going to take from a gentleman in Florida, Eric Romerhaus, who is very active in the state of Florida in trying to change legislation and working towards a better relationship with his children. So, Eric, do you have a question for Phyllis this evening?
Yes, I do, Jill. Thanks again for taking my call here. Phyllis, I had a question. I guess it's just in terms of our advocacy efforts, but what can we do to we're visiting our congressmen, we're calling, we're writing, we're doing everything in our power to make change and inform on parent alienation and advocating for 50-50 shared parenting or 50-50 shared parenting time for fit parents. What can we do? What would be the best use of our time in that effort?
Well, I have come to believe that there are so many things that are wrong with the present situation, but I have come to believe that the single best thing that could be done would be to have 50-50 joint custody as a normal result of divorce. And then, of course, if you've got an unfit parent, then it could be adjusted. But that gives the a baseline to start with, and it avoids a lot of the bias that we are seeing in the courts today. So that is a matter of state law, and I do urge state laws which would say that 50-50 joint custody is the default rule. In other words, that's where you start from. If you want to have something different, you've got to prove a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Phyllis, how realistic, though, do you think that is? And I serve in Illinois on the Illinois Family Law Study Committee to change the divorce law that is so antiquated and hasn't been looked at in 40 years. And we bring those recommendations to the legislature this spring. But how realistic do you think it is that something that says 50-50 is going to get through a legislature with the opposition from attorneys and bar associations and all of the groups that would oppose that because of the cottage industry that's been created by this adversarial divorce?
Well, it's difficult, but now they had a referendum in one state which was non-binding, and so it didn't have any effect. But the public voted overwhelmingly for a 50-50 rule. I believe it was in Massachusetts. And I have seen the 50-50 work very well in divorce cases. So I would hope that people people can accept that. But you find that there are just plain a lot of people who think it's better off, the child is better off if the child has just one home and all his toys and clothes are in one location. I don't buy that, because I think it's more important for the child to have a relationship with his own biological parents. And the stepfather is not the same.
Well, I think probably there's a lot of step-parents that would disagree with you on that subject. However,
well, there's some fathers who are jerks, that's right.
Now, as a stepmother to two children and a biological mother to two children, I get that there's a small difference, but you know, sometimes that step-parent has to fill a role that isn't being filled. And so I don't want to ever slight the role of a step-parent, because I think it's very, very important, especially in today's society as we become, you know, very fragmented and blended families are here to stay.
Well, you're right. We all know situations where it's just exactly as you laid it out. But again, we get back to the enormous power of the judge over private lives and private households, and who has the children and who spends the money and who gets this and who gets that. And it seems to me, if you have a baseline of that respects parental rights of both parents, and then you have to provide reasons for deviating from it. I think that would be a better general rule. Of course, as we all know, there's nothing really happy about the divorce in the first place. But I think the joint custody would be best as the baseline to start from.
Okay. Eric, you are still on the line, and I just wanted to see if you had anything else for Phyllis.
No, that was a great answer, and we're just trying to beef up our advocacy efforts, and there's so many out there that are affected by this, and we're absolutely in agreement with what Phyllis just said. We agree that should be the baseline, that it's all about the child, and they should be the focus in this, that both parents, they should have the right to both parents in their lives as a starting point for two fit parents, and if they need to adjust onward from there for one reason or the other, that should be the norm. Actually, I did, if you don't mind, just one quick question for Phyllis, but
sure.
Who are the biggest, when we go to talk to our Senate, our state senators and our state House members, the question that we get a lot is, who are the biggest opponents to shared parenting? And typically my response is the judges and the attorneys, along with, you know, the women's, the feminist groups and that type of thing. But would you agree with that statement, that the biggest opponents to, you know, to that 50-50 shared parenting time for children, for their best interest as a starting point, would be the opponents, the top two opponents would be the judges and the attorneys?
Well, they would be very powerful opponents. I would certainly blame the feminists for a lot of it. But however, the point you raise is the matter. You have to consider the factor of money. And the older I get, the more I think follow the money explains most of the factors in this country. Now, when you have 50-50 shared parenting, you don't have a whole lot of money moving from one household to the other. Whereas the typical divorce settlement that the judge decides, let's say he gives the custody to the mother and the father gets two Saturdays a month and maybe one Wednesday, and then he has to pay 80-90% of the child support. Now, they all make money out of that. And what you find in so many cases is that the father spends himself into bankruptcy, trying to see his own children, and they all and then he's assigned to be evaluated by a psychologist, be evaluated by custody evaluators, have to take parenting classes and all this sort of stuff, and they all make money out of it. And I think when you have, if you have 50-50 shared custody, there is nowhere near as much money changing hands, so they don't, they're not able to get their hand in the till.
Good answer. Thank you, Eric, for those questions. We really appreciate you calling in from Florida. Phyllis, I'm going to take another question. Is that okay with you?
Oh, sure. And I want to point out that while I think that in the majority of cases it's the father who gets shafted, we certainly know that there are cases where the mother gets shafted, and it does happen both ways.
It absolutely does, and I want to point out it, from the philosophy of Family Matters and from the Parental Alienation Awareness Organization, that this is not a gender issue, and that we have found that women are having just as many problems as men are. So while custody is given to women more readily, the family courts are not kind to parents in a lot of cases. So men and women are both suffering from the issues that we're talking about tonight. So let's take this caller. Welcome, caller. What's your name?
Dr. Wardner.
Hi, Dr. Wardner. I am so glad you're here. We've been looking for you, Phyllis and I. Welcome.
Well, I'm sorry. I could hear you well on my computer, and then I lost the sound, and so it was suggested I call in. I've been able to hear you on the phone, and it sounds like a great show.
Well, great. Phyllis, this is Dr. James Wardner, the dentist from Titusville, Florida, who we were referencing earlier and who is having so much trouble with family courts. And Jim, while you're here, let's talk a little bit, if you can synopsize your case for us, and then let direct a couple of questions to Phyllis for me, if you will.
The synopsis is I spent the earlier part of my life before I became a dentist as a teacher, coach, physical education in schools, elementary school, middle school, high school, and I was always around kids. There never, ever was anyone in my home, in my family, in any of the families that I coached, taught. There was never an instance, or not even an inkling of an instance, that I would do something inappropriate with anyone else's children. And yet, because of family law court, I've been in and out of court and in and out of jail like popcorn. And Phyllis, I'd like to have you, because I've been following you for a long time. By the way, very nice to meet you, even if it's only by the phone.
Okay, good to meet you, doctor.
I've been following you through Eagle Forum for many, many years. And I would like you to, if you could, could you basically discuss the agenda that's going on here? Because to my mind, this is more than simply a matter of a parent, male or female, who can't get to his or her kids. Would you ever, because I know your history with the Equal Rights Amendment and all of the difficult times you had dealing with that. But haven't we come down now through a number of decades, way, way, way down the line, to the point that, in essence, when you go into a courtroom, the job of the court is not to make you a parent. It is not to help the best interest of the kids. But in fact, it's to absolutely destroy the family and to destroy the patriarchal family that used to be the heritage of, in essence, all civilization. And if I'm off base on that, you feel perfectly free to say so. But I'd like to get it from your perspective, how things are winding down here now that we're in 2010, 2011.
Well, I blame the feminist movement for this, and I think it is a very evil movement in our society. And, you know, there's a Harvard professor named Harvey Mansfield who wrote a book called Manliness, And he has one chapter in it where he describes how evil the feminist movement is. And he says that this radical feminist movement that has been dominating our media and academia for the last 25 years is anti-male, anti-masculine, anti-marriage, anti-motherhood, and anti-morality. And my experience is that is absolutely true. They are trying to destroy marriage. A lot of feminists will simply get married and just stick around for a couple of years till they have a baby, and the baby's out of diapers, and then they walk away from marriage. And so they're anti-marriage. They're anti-motherhood because you know there's a modern feminist who had an article in the Washington Post just a few months ago, and in which she said the essence of feminism is the belief that we live in a patriarchal society and we've got to end the patriarchal society. And these people, they're just as much anti-motherhood as they are anti-men, because they think one of the examples of the way the patriarchy oppresses women is that they expect mothers to look after their babies. And the government should do that and lift that burden off of their backs. And their anti-masculinity is seen in the way they've gone after men's sports in the colleges. They have canceled 450 wrestling teams. Now you tell me what good that does for women. That is because wrestling is a very masculine sport. It's not a matter of money. That's the cheapest sport you can have. All you need is a mat. So it is a very anti-family element of our society, and this whole idea that women are victims of the patriarchal society is just nuts. American women are the most fortunate class of people who ever lived on the face of the earth.
It's my understanding that the judges have to take a certain amount of coursework, I guess you might say, like any professional would. But that most of the coursework that they take and most of the instruction they take is driven by the feminist philosophy. So they're taught to come down hard on any instance or accusation or allegation of domestic violence. They're taught to drill it home to, the dads, even though they're men. I mean, but why these men judges, and many are women, but why these men judges are so virulent against their own gender? What's with that?
Well, they're intimidated by the women. I don't think it's normal for men to fight women, and they're intimidated by them. And the feminists have also had the money to engage in this training. Now, the Violence Against Women Act is a terrible racket. It's the bill that Bill Clinton got passed as the payoff to the feminists for supporting him for president in 1992. And it funnels $1 billion a year right into the hands of these feminist centers. And they use some of the money to lobby feminist laws, to engage in their training sessions for judges, for police, for the people who have to do with the family courts. And it's coming up for reauthorization right after the first of the year. We're trying to bring about some changes in the law. They build these registries, these child abuse registries. There's a case up before the Supreme Court right now. And it's a case coming out of California. And once they put you on one of these child abuse registries, there's no way to get off.
Right.
Even though you've been found innocent of everything, there's no way to get off of it. And that's the issue before the Supreme Court.
Phyllis, since the passage of VAWA in 1994, do you think that there has been a built-in incentive for women to make false charges of domestic abuse, orders of protection, sexual allegations against fathers of children in family court?
Absolutely. It's the easiest way for a woman to get custody of her children. once she makes that charge and once she gets the judge to issue a restraining order or gets Child Protective Services to take the children away from the father, basically she's won her case.
What's your view on how to fight back against violence? What do we do about that?
Trying to, hopefully with the new Congress, you might have some men who and some congressmen who have the strength of character to stand up against the feminists. I hope so. Now, of course, nobody's in favor of anybody beating up women. But just an example of the laws that the feminists have gotten states to pass, there's something called the Must Arrest Law. And so what happens is you hear a big commotion in the apartment across the hall, and you call the police, and the police comes out. And by the time he gets there, they've kissed and made up. But he's under order to arrest somebody. Three guesses who he arrests, and it's a very bad law. And then another part is no drop the prosecution. And there are plenty of times when the wife they've made up. The wife wants to go back and repair her marriage. And they won't drop the case, and so there are all kinds of things the matter that the feminists have put through in their training sessions and in state and federal laws that need to be changed.
Does VAWA come up for reauthorization, or is it simply
every five years, and it'll be up after the first of the year. It's nearly $1 billion.
Will you be in Washington lobbying that reauthorization against that reauthorization, Phyllis?
Yes.
Jim, you had a question?
Well, I wanted to ask Phyllis because she mentioned Bill Clinton, and it was my understanding that then Senator Joe Biden, now Vice President Biden, was very forceful in promoting the Violence Against Women Act, and it was the most heavily lobbied act I have read that has ever been in the United States. So my concern is, and again, I'd like to have Phyllis address this, that do we not only have a feminist movement issue, but we have a federal government subsidized issue, again, that is promoting the absolute destruction of the family. And, of course, we're back to what do you do about it? From my perspective, from what I've seen, the only time change gets made in this country is when there's so much weight, force, and voice against it that the opponents have to kind of just step back a bit to say, well, we've been just a little bit too bold and they're catching on to what we're doing. I'd just like to have Phyllis address that.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And, of course, the Violence Against Women Act is Joe Biden's favorite piece of legislation. He's the sponsor of it, and he talks about it all the time. And he's now got a new version of it he calls IVAWA, which means International VAWA, because he wants to take these ideas worldwide. And, of course, women are mistreated in a lot of other countries. I don't know that that's our job, but that is certainly correct. And I think we've got to give the people in Congress a sufficient backbone in order to deal with this matter, because nobody wants to be on the side of defending a man who would hit a woman, and it becomes a little bit difficult for people to deal with. Taking a little time here, I like to tell people. One night I was watching public television, and there were some wildlife pictures from Alaska. And they showed some bears. These are real bears. Now, the male bear is about 30% bigger than the female bear. He's a big monster. And they showed several sequences of this. And the female bear paced off an area for her fishing so she could take care of her two cubs. And she had it all paced. Then you have this male bear who's tried to encroach on her area. and they squared off just like boxers in a ring. You know, when the boxers getting ready to fight, how they glare at each other and kind of dance around. So the male and female bear did that. And then this big, huge male bear who could beat the female to a pulp hung his head and walked away. And I deduced from that that it's just too hard for men to fight women. And normal men, that is. You've got some slobs out there who, but most men can't do it. And we've got to give them the strength of mind to remedy some of the problems in the laws. And a lot of these problems are caused by the laws put in by the feminists.
Hello, Jill. Yeah, this is Dave Carlin over here in Maryland.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Phyllis,
pleased to meet you over the phone.
Yeah.
And basically, I'm calling because one of the issues that we're seeing is that a lot of the funding that is going through VAWA is actually being abused by the various programs underneath VAWA that... the funding is actually being used for low-cost lawyers and lobbying efforts that are directly opposed to equal parenting and children's rights, more importantly than anything, is that they are actively, in various states' legislation, actively lobbying against children's rights. And to tie in with the doctor's question, you know, a lot of these efforts, what we run into when we're lobbying here in Washington and on in Maryland, is that we're running into the psychiatric associations, we're running into the legal lobbies, the bar associations that aren't supposed to be lobbying are actively basically, what could we do to stop having a lawyer legislators or remove them from be recused from a lot of these votes, because they're the ones that are being promoted by the legal profession to actually ultimately abuse our children with legislation, such as Biden. Biden's a lawyer, and he gave one of the biggest, drafted one of the biggest gifts to the legal profession with VAWA.
Yes, you are right. It is a big gift to the legal profession. And yes, and you are right in what you said. I can confirm that. And VAWA does provide money when there are disputes between husband and wife or in the family situation. They provide lawyers to the woman but not to the man.
Well, what we're finding is that it's a win-win for the lawyers, because if it doesn't matter whether it's a man or woman, if they're we're seeing the majority of them that are being abused are the low income families.
Yeah.
And typically one will get representation from an abused persons program, and the other one will get representation from the public defender if they're smart enough to act on it. If they don't act on getting the public defender, they go in pro se and they're crucified.
Yeah.
And the one of the things that we tried to get passed here was to have the judges warn the people about the repercussions of consenting to these domestic violence charges. Just by consenting, they lose Second Amendment rights. They lose employability.
I'm going to have Phyllis comment on that, Dave, and
Jill, the caller is absolutely right. He does lose his Second Amendment rights. They provide the lawyer very easily to the woman and not to the man. That is perfectly true, and it is a very unfair situation. And it ought to be changed by state law. That's correct.
Jim, what other questions do you have for Phyllis tonight? We've got about 13 minutes left, and I think it's so important what we're covering here tonight. And what do you have as a follow-up?
Well, I think Phyllis mentioned it a little bit earlier. At least she referred to it, that not only do we have a problem with feminists, and not only do we have a problem with of people like Bill Clinton and Joe Biden, but the media is very much involved in this as well, in that there is a complete cover-up and blackout on any aspect of the story that we're talking about right now. Now, if you're talking about a deadbeat dad who didn't pay any, you know, a $1 worth of money to the kids, you know, college fund, or if you're talking about, you know, a man who lost his temper, we're going to hear all about that. But this other side of the story, fathers that are being put in jail for, you know, minor infractions, the kinds of things that Phyllis was referring to before, you got to arrest somebody, so who do you think they're going to arrest? The media will not touch this with a 10-foot pole, and I'd like, Phyllis, if you would, to address that aspect of this.
Yes, that's a very important aspect, and Bernard Goldberg has told a lot about that. For example, he said, what's wrong with daycare is the biggest story you'll never see on television because the feminists in CBS won't let it on. And the feminists are very powerful in the media, as they are in the colleges. The women's studies courses are turning out anti-male propaganda all the time. And the feminists are extremely powerful and intimidating in the media to keep the stories that off the air that ought to be on. Actually, I'm coming out with a new book after the first of the year that's going to explain how this whole feminist ideology has permeated through the media, academia, the whole court system, and people ought to understand that. The feminists are the female left. They are out to fundamentally transform our society, and we hope we can expose them.
What an excellent answer. I think, Phyllis, you should tune in tomorrow night. I'm having Joan Meyer from George Washington University on the show to talk about domestic violence and all of these things that we've been discussing tonight, but she's on the other side, so we'll see how that goes. So I hope everybody tunes in tomorrow night. I have somebody in the chat room, Radioactive Online, that would like to know, Phyllis, hang on, let me get it here, they would like to know what you think is the next best step to stem the tide of this government overreaching into our families. And in other words, what do they as voters and non-custodial parents do next?
Well, I already said that I think that to have joint custody as the baseline for deciding custody would be the best single thing. I think that would be a great deterrent to divorce and to a lot of the problems that we've been discussing. Now, there's another aspect, which is simply the breakdown of marriage. And this is one of the big problems we have in this country. We have 41% of the babies in the United States last year were born out of wedlock. Now, that means that they don't have a father providing for them. In most cases, it means the taxpayers, you and I, are paying for them. And I just think girls have got to be taught that you ought to get married first. And the problem is the financial incentives that are there to non-marriage. And we have all these means-tested handouts, whether not only the welfare system, but the housing, the food stamps, the what's called the TANF, the EITC, and all of these means-tested tests, which basically go to single moms. And we now have 40% of the American people who are looking to the government for all or part of their living expenses. And it's a definite financial incentive against getting married. They even put a marriage disincentive in Obamacare. And,
but, Phyllis, I think we know, right, we understand that this world today in 2010 is not the world that you and I are used to. We've established that. We have to, even though you and I may not like it, we have to reassess what the nuclear family has become. It's not the family of my parents. It's not like it was when I was a kid. You've got gay couples, lesbian couples. You've got couples that have never been married. You have several children. So how do you how do you justify the changing world with the views that you have about how it should be?
Well, I would answer that by saying, how do you justify my maid being forced to pay for their change in lifestyle? And because most of these people who have children without marriage are living on taxpayers' money. And how do you justify making me pay for something that I think is wrong, bad for society, immoral, and I don't see any reason why I should pay for that?
And do you think that there is, as I do, that there is such a necessary change in divorce culture? Because if we don't deal with the incredibly high rate of divorce and stave off some of the adversarial emotional justice that goes on in courtrooms and the cottage industry that exists between lawyers and court-appointed advocates and judges and all of the horrible things that are going on in our court system, what is our country going to look like in 30 years when we allow
that's right. And there was an article just yesterday, I think, in the New York Times about how people used to think that the unmarried, single moms and so forth, were just the poor and uneducated. But they said that now new surveys show that it's creeping into what you might call the middle class. And people just don't think marriage is so important anymore. And I think marriage is essential for a stable society. Man-woman marriage is what we have to take care of the fact of life that in the normal course of events, people get together and these helpless little babies appear. And there's got to be a responsibility for caring for them, because if somebody doesn't care for a baby, it's going to die. And marriage is the way we dealt with that. And it's a great mistake to have incentives that discourage people from getting married. We should our incentives should go the other way.
All right, let's take one more call, fellas, from the 863 area code. You're on the air.
Yeah, that's me, Jill. It's Eric again.
Oh,
yeah.
Hi, Eric. Okay, you have one more question?
Yeah, well, more of a comment, but it's touching on what Phyllis was just talking about. And Phyllis, again, I'm a big fan of yours. I've read, I'm on your Eagle Forum all the time. I love your articles, and you're so point on. But I'll be honest with you, I've had a lot of advocacy and support efforts here in Florida as well, helping out the falsely accused. We actually had an NBC did a story on three falsely accused fathers in the state of Florida, and it's actually a felony to make a false allegation, and nothing's being done. The prosecutors won't prosecute, DCF will not get involved, and it's turned the other cheek based on the results of VAWA and the feminist movement. But I will say that, and I'd be curious to your opinion on this, but the actual institution of marriage, because of the way it's being interpreted by the judges and the attorneys and all the court-appointed parental coordinators, custody evaluators, it's almost as if people have a hard time believing in the institution of marriage anymore, because there are no equal rights. I mean, there are fathers and mothers that are both taking advantage of the system, and people are more turning toward cohabitation agreements versus marriage. And it just would be curious on your comments of that and the institution of marriage, and you know where you see that going.
Well, what
Thanks,
you
Sarah.
Say is correct, and my answer is we cannot use taxpayers' money to provide financial incentives against marriage. I think that's where we should start, and it is absolutely wrong to take taxpayers' money from people who are living a fine, orderly, safe life and take their money and subsidize and promote non-marriage. But that is what is going on in this country. And as a matter of fact, Tony Podesta, who is a big advisor of Obama and used to be an advisor of Bill Clinton, has got a think tank now, and he's developed 83 pieces of legislation to channel taxpayers' money to single moms. Now, that's wrong. We don't want to spend our money that way. And as I mentioned, I do think follow the money explains a lot of these problems, and that's what we have to stop. And I would urge your listeners, Jill, to go on my website, eagleforum.org, and you can go to topics and then click on fathers, and you will, and also on feminism, and you will see a lot of additional material that we don't have time to talk about tonight.
Absolutely. That's another 10 shows, isn't it, Phyllis?
Right.
Yeah. There's someone in the chat room, Phyllis, that is basically saying, just making a statement, the simple solution then is absent abuse and neglect and abandonment, we should just remove children from adult conflicts in the family courts, don't you think?
I'm not sure what you mean by that, but I,
well,
I don't...
Well, what they're
I don't,
saying is... Go ahead.
I don't think the family court should be making family decisions. I think the parents should be required to work it out.
Phyllis, how would you counsel someone who is going through entering into divorce right now? What would you say to them to keep them from living the horror of divorce court? What would your advice be?
Well, that counseling is not my profession. I don't know whether I can do that. But
what would your advice then?
But I would try to work it out and make your own deal with the mother and father. I think you will be better off than whatever the court decides.
And try to do some co-parenting and work together in raising that child to be...
Because I think the child deserves that. The child deserves
absolutely
both a mother and a father.
That's what we think here on Family Matters. A mother and a father are the most important things in a child's life. And it is a constitutional right. And it is the best for the upbringing of a child. Phyllis, we are so pleased to have you here tonight. And I hope sometime you'll come back and be with us again. And I want you to tell our audience again the website address.
Well, the website is eagleforum, one word, .org. And then you can go to topics and you can click on feminism or you can click on fathers and you'll get a whole lot of additional information.
And are you out speaking now, Phyllis? Is there someplace we can see you coming up in the near future?
Well, I am speaking around, but I don't know that I have any to announce tonight. We're getting ready for Christmas now.
Yeah, Christmas is coming, and we are just thankful for you to take the time out to be with us during this busy holiday season.
Well, thank you for having this program. It's wonderful that you have this program on Family Matters. I compliment you.
Thank you, Phyllis, and thank you all for tuning in. And as I said earlier, tune in tomorrow night. We'll have a really spirited show just like this one with Joan Meyer from George Washington University. And, of course, my host, Judge Michelle Lawrence from Cook County Courts, will be back with us tomorrow night. You all have a lovely, lovely night, and we appreciate you tuning in. Thanks, Phyllis.
All right. Thanks. God bless you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
A look, your smile can't disguise the look of love. It's saying so much more than just words could ever say, and what my heart has heard, well, it takes my breath away. I can hardly wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long I have waited, waited just to love you. Now that I've found you, you've got the look of love. It's on your face, the look, the time can erase.